Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 56, section 8, which is old single column, page 643. All right. These next two sections are sort of the meat of them is pretty deep, especially the next section, section 9. But you know, sort of appreciate what they're doing. They've stepped us through some material that is, you know, reasonably approachable, culminating in this the pair of sections that we've just gone through, where you had, you know, the two aspects of the picture. In section 6, you had the unification of evolutionary deity, and then in 7, you had universal evolutionary repercussions. So, in a very generalized sense, you see, you have deity and reality there. You know, just getting us to reflect on the big picture of the finite, the total finite, and that parallel of reality being drawn up and deity engaging it from the top down. And now, so subsequent to that, they want to just give a little bit on the issue of unity from a transcendent perspective. So this next section, you can see, is talking about supremacy, you know, is reasonably understandable as just an encompassing of that twofold picture that they just gave you in the previous two sections. But then, you know, after that, you can see it goes to absoluteness, and they are going to use the opportunity to mostly suggest, and I'll explain what I mean when we get there. But let's just you know, in general, we'll stay, you know, bounded back a bit, not try to dig too deep, get into too much complexity, but just appreciate that. So an initial encouragement that they're giving you to let your mind soar as high as it can above the finite, and appreciate some all-encompassing sense of unity beyond anything that is even remotely sort of directly understandable, right? But nonetheless, you know, to make sure that you know that it's there, even if it's very experientially remote. Just knowing that unity has no bounds is an important knowing this, important fact to just have always at the back of your mind, that no matter how broken something might seem, nothing can break infinite unity, right? And it remains unified, right? And then in this section 8, you can see we have this very active title. You know, it's not, you know, supreme unity or unification, but unifier. The universe is mind made and personality managed. Never forget that no matter how much facts of reality might seem to be self-established or self-maintaining, they aren't. universe is mind made and personality managed. It's maintained the way it is, no matter how seemingly impersonal and constant, you know, something might be. It is ultimately maintained by personality choice at some transcendent level that never blinks. Right? A universal constant in physics is universally constant because someone, somewhere, somehow is never blinking. And everything is maintained by free will choice. All right, so there is a transcendent unifier encompassing all of that unification of evolutionary deity and deity unity and whatnot that we've been reading about. So let's see what they have to say here.
Number 8, the supreme unifier. The supreme being has a threefold function in the experience of mortal man. First, he is the unifier of time-space divinity, God the sevenfold. Second, he is the maximum of deity, which finite creatures can actually comprehend. Third, he is mortal man's only avenue of approach to the transcendental experience of consorting with absonite mind, eternal spirit, and paradise personality.
Okay, so if it wasn't obvious from the title when they said the supreme unifier, you should be saying to yourself immediately, that must be the supreme being. Yep, sure enough. So the paragraph starts out, the supreme being. And then they give you some details, saying that in a very immediate sense, you can understand the fact of the supreme being in three different ways. You know, even though that's, as a literal being that you can walk up to and shake hands with, it's an absonite being, transcendent of the finite, not located anywhere in finite space, in finite dimensionality. Nonetheless, you can begin to conceive, and you notice they say in the experience of mortal man. So appreciating that the supreme being is just immediately behind the scenes, as it were, through free will, personality choice, maintaining the finite in certain ways, or facilitating the processes in the finite in certain ways, which even though you wouldn't directly experience, you will experience something that you logically could recognize can only be because right immediately behind the scenes there's the supreme being. Okay. So what are those three? Okay, so the first one, he is the unifier of time-space divinity, in other words, God the sevenfold, they say. Okay, so you notice it's he, first of all. Yeah, so we are definitely talking about the supreme being. We've been talking a lot about, within the finite, something that I can more directly experience, the she and the it of supremacy that's down in the finite. But you see, we want to definitely think about he-ness as a transcendent, so on the outside rather than ubiquitously on the inside. So not she, but he, transcendently on the outside. They say God the sevenfold, so you're thinking, well, maybe I should pop out, the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart and just remind myself of what they must be pointing, pointing to there, or, and invoking there. If you look at the sevenfold creators column, sure enough, right there, on that fourth cosmic level is, quote unquote, the supreme being. You don't have you know, something like, you know, the Universal Mother there, or the Almighty Supreme. I mean, those are over in other columns. You don't just have, say, the Supreme. You know, you have a Creator. Okay, so it's got to be a being. And it reminds you, like we've said, I mean, you know, the Universal Father obviously isn't a finite fact. But this is the Universal Father in the sevenfold. And so, you know, this is sort of directly, when you're looking at the chart, that's the Supreme Being, that transcendent fact, brought down in intimacy, you know, in the context of the sevenfold. But, as they're kind of getting at here in this paragraph, you know, when they say he is the unifier of time-space divinity, God the sevenfold. So you notice they didn't say deity, they said divinity. So they're thinking of all those individuals that I, you know, were on that chart that I was just holding up, all the creators and controllers, and you know, all the supreme controllers, for instance, and all the supreme creators. All of those beings as individuals with their different flavors of divinity. That transcendent of all those individuals that you can engage in some finite way, there's this encompassing unifier being who not only makes his appearance within, but, you know, he's, you know, you're looking at that chart, there's three levels below and three levels above the Supreme Being. So right in the center, he makes his appearance within the sevenfold. But then you can kind of picture that at that center point is sort of the point at which you transcend that whole phenomenon, and there's something that encompasses. You know, we often kind of speak of things like that as, like, if you think of matter and spirit side by side, and then superadditively above them is mind. So initially you think of it as just a third point, so that you have like the three corners of a triangle, right? So initially you're just thinking it's a third point, or in the case there, you know, it's a seventh creator, but then from that point you encompass the whole, you know, so that mind initially is just a third energy, but then it is also the energy that encompasses, you know, and within which there's the triunity, like we talked about earlier in the paper. So you're seeing a similar thing here, only now with that sevenfoldness of the sevenfold creators, thinking about, on the one hand, it's one of the seven folds of the sevenfold creators, the supreme being within the sevenfold, but then on the other hand, it's a transcendent encompassment of that whole engagement of the finite by the sevenfold. Okay? So when you're thinking about that aspect of the supreme being functioning in that way, or acting even, you might say, in that way, as, you know, he is the unifier, see, acting in that way, that's when you're thinking of the supreme being as the supreme mind, capital S, capital M, you know, as an alternative designation for that being, the supreme mind. The supreme mind encompasses all supreme values, right? The unifier of time-space divinity. The supreme mind encompasses all supreme values. So that's the supreme being as the supreme mind. Okay, number two, second, he is the maximum of deity which finite creatures can actually comprehend. Okay. You know, we've mentioned this, you know, quite frequently, you know, that we're a finite being, can't change that fact, no matter how much we're educated, you know, in Havona or what have you, we're still a finite being, until the Supreme Being bestows that fragment of spirit upon us and makes us a seven-stage spirit and lifts us up out of the finite. So as long as you're a finite creature, right, you have a maximum of you know, actual comprehension, so you know, potential, as they say there. You know, so you extrapolate what you can directly understand, right, to its limits of supremacy. And, you know, here they're specifically thinking about the Supreme Being. So what would I, you know, what would be an alternative designation for the Supreme Being that's really in line with what they're saying there, where I'm trying to reach as far as I can towards some goal, and I really, you know, technically max out at that point. Like, what if I'm trying to reach all the way to the Universal Father? This is an infinite being. Okay, I'm not going to make it all the way, not even close. Right? I'm only going to make it as far, technically, as the Supreme Father. Another designation for the Supreme Being. Capital S, capital F, the Supreme Father. Right? When all is said and done, the Father idea is still the highest human concept of God. Right? What's the technical backdrop of that statement? Where do you technically max out? Well, you know, what's the highest point you can get to? You can't get all the way to the Universal Father. Right? You max out at the Supreme Father, right? Which is far short, which is even on paradise.
When you finally meet the Father, you're...
We'll talk about that in a little bit. You know, exactly what, you know, how you understand the paradise. That's coming up here in just a second. But just, you know, notice right here, you know, they're not putting you on paradise. It just says you can actually comprehend. Okay, so, you know, actually wrap your mind around, right? Comprehend means wrap your mind around, literally, right? And we'll, like I said, we'll explain the difference at the end of the next paragraph about what you're bringing up. So to be able to just like sit right here and somehow imagine, expanding your comprehension, you know, What's the fullness that you could actually wrap your mind? You can't wrap it around an infinite fact. Right? Now, the most you can ever potentially wrap around is the Supreme Father. Okay? So see, that second one is reminding you of another alternate designation for the Supreme Being. Supreme Being is the Supreme Mind, and the Supreme Being is the Supreme Father. Right? And so, you know, that deity, you know, that's the maximum that which finite creatures can actually comprehend. You know, don't worry, that's plenty big. That'll blow your mind, right? Okay. don't feel like you're being shortchanged.
Comprehending your creator's son.
Yeah. Remember what the first one was indicating, okay? This, you know, he's also the Supreme Mind. Literally encompasses the totality of the finite, right? You know, which right now we recognize, you know, it will include, you know, a finite evolutionary beginning of all four outer space levels, you know, as a power phenomenon. Okay, encompassing all of that finiteness, you know, not to mention a fair number of beings, finite beings, all. He's completely transcendent and encompasses all those beings. You know, you think a divine counselor being able to just encompass everything that humans have ever thought and written, you know. Okay, well, the Supreme Being encompasses all divine counselors and all, right, and all, you know, all of that, you know, everything, every automaton, you know, in its finite manifestation, you know, every creature, every single cell creature, you know, all the mindedness of, okay, encompasses all of that. Very, very big fact. Plenty enough, close enough to infinity for our purposes. Right? Okay. You won't feel shortchanged. So the Supreme Mind and then the Supreme Father. And then what's the third one? We already talked about this one back in section 6. I'm reminding you of this again. So it says, third, he is mortal man's only avenue of approach to the transcendental experience of consorting with absonite mind, eternal spirit, and paradise personality. Okay, so you're picturing, yeah, I'm going to get in to the absonite mind in the central universe and finally get to paradise. Oh yeah, that's right, I've got the sixth circuit of Havona. And remember how they mentioned that, how they said it specifically was, let's see, can I find that spot? But he functioned only on spiritual levels there. God the Supreme as a person existed in Havona before the creation of the seven super universes, but he functioned only on spiritual levels. Remember that line? So it's not as a personal fact, but like they said, only on spiritual levels. So it's a spirit fact, sort of the spirit part of the personalized spirit person is present there from the beginning. That's the Supreme Spirit, remember? Capital S, capital S. So yet another designation, and that one's, you know, a little trickier. You know, it's not so much in the thinking of the sense of sort of encompassing the finite, in a sort of a quantity way, like we were sort of picturing here before, but, you know, encompassing all the temporality of the finite from the eternity in the central universe, right, as the Supreme Spirit. You know, so again, it's transcendent, being in the way that the central universe is transcendent of the super universe level.
Will you say that one more time?
Okay. So that, you know, so instead of thinking so literally as, you know, encompassing the space sort of the finite, so in a quantity sense, now think of him being transcendent as eternity transcends time. You know, he encompasses all of the temporality of the finite from the vantage point of eternity in the central universe, in the eternal universe, right? That's another way where you can think of, even though that's not a he or a she per se, either one, you know, it's more just an it, it's a spirit presence, okay? But you can, it's most direct to think of it as a spirit presence of the he, not the spirit presence of the she. You know, it's there, still transcendent, not quite as transcendent as literally the Supreme Being, totally transcendent, right? Because you can actually, you know, sort of walk through that spirit presence on the sixth circuit, you know? Whereas you can't, like I said, walk up and shake hands with the Supreme Being, right? So you can get intimate with that. It's downstepped, but only in the sense that, you know, that it's in Havona. It's not literally here. Remember what we pointed out, the reciprocal of the Supreme Spirit in the, you know, as a finite presence is the finite upholder, you know, the universal mother. Okay. So those are the three things: the Supreme Mind, the Supreme Father, the Supreme Spirit. You know, and there's no way to get into any definitive relationship with absonity in the central universe, and then all the way, you know, like they're saying, to eternal spirits and paradise personalities on the aisle, except through the through the sixth circuit, through that synchronization with that presence of him there. Okay? Any sort of a real conscious comprehension experience heading towards the Universal Father will actually resonate with the Supreme Father. So they say, you know, in the experience of mortal man, you know, or any experience of the individuals of the sevenfold functioning in this seemingly magically unified way, right? You're appreciating the action of the Supreme Mind doing that. Like I often point out, you know, there's no set of finite facts that the Supreme Mind can't work with, right? Because the Supreme Mind is transcendent of all that finiteness. And it's like, yeah, that's no problem. I can work with that set of finite facts. Nothing can transcend its ability to adapt to to the situation, because it's an encompassing transcendent fact, supreme mind. Yeah, so if you if you become sort of aware of that fact, you can remind yourself that behind that experience is the supreme mind acting. Behind your experience of the Father is the supreme Father being the supreme Father. That experience of coming into synchronization on the sixth circuit that you'll eventually experience, that again is He, as a spirit presence there, as the Supreme Spirit. Okay, so that's that little paragraph is really the most complicated thing here that we've got off in this section. Okay, it gets a little bit more approachable here for the rest of this section. So let's see what they say next.
Ascendant finaliters, having been born in the local universes, nurtured in the super universes, and trained in the central universe, embrace in their personal experiences the full potential of the comprehension of the time-space divinity of God the Sevenfold, unifying in the Supreme. Finaliters serve successively in super universes other than those of nativity, thereby superimposing experience upon experience until the fullness of the sevenfold diversity of possible creature experience has been encompassed. Through the ministry of the indwelling adjusters, the finaliters are enabled to find the universal Father. But it is by these techniques of experience that such finaliters come really to know the Supreme Being, and they are destined to the service and the revelation of this Supreme Deity in and to the future universes of outer space.
Okay. All right, so they give you that initial just a little thumbnail sketch of your whole experience relative to the finite. You have the initial phase where you're ascending, right, to the Father, and then that subsequent phase as a finaliter, where, like they remind you, you're going to, eventually to all seven super universes, doing that. You ascend to perfection, and then you penetrate horizontally to completion.
And not so, coming back to our universe, though, right?
Well, you will, but not until you've done the other six. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Because obviously it goes on and on and on, so you'll have plenty of time to max out on the other six super universes, and there's still trillions and trillions of years to go, right? Right. So lots of time to rattle all around in all seven super universes and do all kinds of different things. Okay, so notice the little thing that they brought in here, about to the middle there, when they said you're engaging all the details, in this long experiential journey of the time-space divinity of God the Sevenfold, unifying in the Supreme. Okay, so instead of saying the Supreme Being, if you say God the Supreme from the top down, immediately you are definitely thinking of something that is transcendent. God the Supreme is transcendent to the finite. Supremacy, right? It's the Supreme. So again, you can think of that fact as encompassing. But the deity, the Supreme, you can think of as being ubiquitously present within.
So yeah. What's the tummy and what's the body?
Yeah, so we often, when we think about the personality, you think about this gift of personality, you think of it as encompassing a threefold actuality that you've developed as a nature, right? And that personality gift encompasses that and gives it a oneness. Right, so you can think of the same things. Think of, this sort of sphere of the finite as being permeated with the Supreme, and then if you personalize that deity, right, if you encompass it, And then you have God the Supreme. So you have that transcendent encompassing fact. Okay. But if you go down inside, there's this ubiquitous presence of supreme type deity throughout the finite domain. And it fills every square inch or cubic inch of this room. Okay. All right, so they're reminding you that you've got all this phenomena that's exists in the upon that backdrop of the supreme deity, and so as you're going about interacting with all this individuality, you're like a snowball rolling around in that in the supreme, accumulating that nature. Now, technically, you know, we've talked about this occasionally when it comes up, and it's done it again here. So let me just remind you. So in the first phase, you are God the Father seeking, right? As you're ascending to perfection, you're God the Father seeking, but you're God the Mother acquiring, God the Mother nature. Acquiring, you know, you're not literally going to become God the Mother. You know, so you're God the Mother nature acquiring. You're an experiential being. And so initially as this snowball is rolling around and is rolling up to the aisle, you're not accumulating the fullness of God the Supreme nature, you know, but God the Supreme as God the Mother, that phase of it, you're accumulating. God the Mother acquiring. Because remember, when you go out in the second phase as a finaliter, you're God the Mother revealing. Right? So you're God the Father seeking, and then the second phase, you're God the Mother revealing. Well, you can't reveal that which you haven't acquired. Right? So that's what you've been acquiring. Well, in that second phase, you're still, as a finaliter, you're still an experiential creature. So you're still accumulating something through that experience. What now? That's what they're reminding of here. See, they're talking about the finaliters going all about, rolling their snowball all over the universe of universes. What are you acquiring there? God, the supreme nature acquiring. See, now you're acquiring in that second phase, that fullness, God, the supreme nature acquiring. So now look at that, how it ends there with the three italicized words. See, you know, through the ministry of the indwelling adjusters, the finaliters are enabled to find the universal Father, and the italicized find. Okay, so, right, remember, initially you're seeking, right? And so what's the word that's paired with that? Find, right? Right? You find that which you seek. So you're God the Father seeking, and you find God the Father. Okay? Now, how is that different? Here's what you were bringing up, John. How is that different than what they were saying about, you know, the maximum of deity which finite creatures can actually comprehend? Okay, like I said, is the Supreme Father. When you find the Universal Father, you don't comprehend the Universal Father, right? If you go back, when they're talking about the angels that are helping you on each of those circuits of Avona, remember how they talk about what you find of the three persons. They say you achieve a personality recognition. Okay, not a comprehension, right? Just a personality recognition. So when you find the Father, see, you achieve a personality recognition of his existence. But that's it. Right? You recognize his existence. And now in terms of comprehension, the maximum that you could comprehend is the downstepped expression of the Universal Father as the Supreme Father. Right, you can comprehend, you know, sort of that subset. See,
it's pretty big.
Right, this is very big. You know, think of the Supreme Father as a subset of the Universal Father. You know, a downstepped expression of the Universal Father. That's the biggest portion of his infinity that you can wrap your mind around, right, and actually comprehend. But the entire infinite person is one person. And if you achieve personality recognition, you achieve personality recognition of the existence of an infinite person. Not just part of the infinite person, but, right, remember, personality encompasses that entire infinite person. See, so technically you've recognized that entire infinite person, but you can't comprehend that infinite person. You can, I mean, another way, you resonate with the ideal, but the idea, you know, the details of that infinite person, no.
Right. So we'll be able to finally comprehend the Supreme Father when we go into paradise, the third time, and then we're going to go back out, and we're going to acquire Supreme Nature, so it's hard to think that we could comprehend the Supreme Father when we haven't acquired.
Well, okay, right, but remember, you're not there comprehending the Supreme Father. Right, that's the whole point, and that's the next thing and they're giving you here. Right, see, and then it says.
But you were saying that we were going to be able to.
No, I was just saying theoretically, all you could comprehend there is the Supreme Father.
Okay.
That you know. I mean, to think that you just waltz up for the first time and boom, you comprehend the Supreme Father is like thinking that when you die, you wake up, you know, and you're shaking hands with the Universal Father, right? It's, you know, there's no magic transition like that, right? You know, if that was the case, why would you go out and do all that snowball rolling around in the seven super universes thing, right? See, right?
So really, we only recognize
just a personality recognition of the Universal Father. Okay, but you're not. It's a personality recognition of the Universal Father there. Okay? And now you're going to try to penetrate to a completion of recognition of fatherness. Right? And what you are technically wrapping your mind around is Supreme Fatherness. Okay? And to that, the degree to which you comprehend the Supreme Father, you comprehend, you know, a portion of the Universal Father. Right? So, you know, every time you go back to paradise, you know, there's a greater resonance with that infinite being at the center of the aisle. You know, it begins to go beyond just that initial pure personality recognition, and there starts to be some... you know, you're not just consecrating your personality or your will. Right? You begin to be able to have a mind consecration resonance with the Universal Father there. Right? Okay. But the first thing is, you know, italicized find. You're finding the Universal Father. Okay. But it is by these techniques of experience. Remember, the Universal Father is purely existential. Not experiential. So he's not directly experienceable. He's just existentially recognizable. See, and that doesn't change, but see, like I'm saying, you've acquired this, as you acquire an experiential comprehension of the Supreme Father, you overlay it on the Universal Father, and you effectively comprehend the Universal Father to that degree. But, you know, remember, he's purely existential deity, so you can't directly experience his deity, okay?
So remember in one of the ends of the papers when the divine counselor is saying, you know, many times have I sojourned in the presence of the Universal Father,
right,
and I
right.
know wherever I speak, talking right. about his loving nature,
right,
whatever.
Right, right.
So in a way, that's kind of like, you know, he's found the Father, he kind of knows a certain portion of it, but it's kind of what you're saying. Even the divine counselor doesn't really comprehend the Father.
Divine counselor is just a finite
being.
Even though
he's been there many times.
Right. Still just
so
a finite being.
He knows him, just kind of like, I know you.
Right.
But I don't totally 100% comprehend you, but I still know you, right? I mean...
Yeah, yeah, you see that the next word they italicize is know.
Yeah.
Right? And see, we're just trying to, you know, knowing is about, you know, encompassing experience, okay? And just remember that technicality, that the Universal Father, in and of himself, is purely existential. It's not something that you experientially relate to. You just existentially relate to. Right? The Father, the maximum of which you can comprehend a Father being right now, as an experiential fact, is the Supreme Father. Right? Now, if you downstep the Universal Father into something that can be experienced to the fullness of a finite creature, what you have is the Supreme Father. Right?
Is that the same?
That's the Universal Father made experienceable to finite beings.
In a way, is that the same for the Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit?
Yeah.
You can't really totally.
He who has seen me has seen the Son. You know, those sorts of things, right? You acquire. You can't directly experience the existential deity of the Son. It's existential deity. It's not experiential deity. Same way with the existential deity of the Spirit. Right? So you get it indirectly as downstepped expressions, which in the process of downstepping, the only way you can downstep it is to combine it with experiential deity. Some way, okay, so that experiential creatures can relate to it. Right? There's only two beings that know the Universal Father as an existential being. The other two infinite existential beings, right, that exist with him and know him existentially. Right? They're on the outside with him, as it were. But everyone else is on the inside, within the domain of experience, right? Okay. All right, so that next thing, but it is by these techniques of experience, so that whole, going around doing all this stuff, that such finaliters come really to know the Supreme Being. Okay? Such finaliters, right? So you're in the second phase, you're God the Supreme Nature acquiring, right? So you literally, come really to know the Supreme Being. You are acquiring that kind of nature that resonates with the literal fact of the Supreme Being. Okay? So even though you haven't yet walked up and said hi to this being, and you won't until the finite has come to an end. When you do, it will be like greeting a being that you've known as far back as you can remember, because you've been more and more of him, with every moment of your finaliter life. Yeah, and even before that, this God the Supreme as God the Mother, you were acquiring, even before that. Just a personal purposive part of God the Supreme. You were acquiring even while you were just ascending. Right? As far back as your conception, you've been accumulating effectively the ability to relate to that Supreme Being eventually.
And here today is one of the farthest backs you're going to go.
Like I said, it's not very far back to when you were a single-celled organism, right? We're back towards the beginning of starting to accumulate, in this not directly relationship to Supreme-type deity, but Mother-type deity, God the Supreme as God the Mother. But as a finaliter, it's very direct. You are God the Supreme seeking, God the Supreme Nature acquiring. Okay, you're coming really to know, right? So there's this accumulating comprehension of his nature, and the final bit of acquirement will be that fiat gift of a fragment of him to make you a seven-stage spirit. Okay? You know, see, so it's, you know, when you're God the Supreme Seeking, you know, you're effectively seeking that point when you get that fragment, spirit fragment bestowed upon you. And at that point can find an absonite being. See, you know, you're seeking an absonite being. You know, it's like, well, I was seeking an infinite being when I was seeking the Father. Yes, but remember, technically, you're seeking the universal Father within the sevenfold. You know, that's another qualification to what we've just been saying. All right, so then the third thing, they say, and they are destined, so these finalities are destined to the service and the revelation, so they italicize revelation, of this supreme deity in and to the future universes of outer space. So if you are in that whole second phase, God the supreme nature acquiring, when you've fully acquired that, subsequently you can be God the supreme revealing. Right? That's what they're referring to. That next phase, transfinite. Literally, you are then God the supreme revealing. That's why they
said they really didn't, that was their speculation, but they really didn't know for sure about that. Even though, remember in the last couple of weeks ago?
It doesn't matter where you are. You don't have to be in the outer space levels. Okay. No matter where you end up being, I mean, you'll be God the Supreme Revealing.
No matter where you are,
because you've acquired that nature. When you're standing on the Isle of Paradise, you're God the Supreme Revealing. Okay.
Well, it does say future universes of outer space.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, I mean, no one can understand any other option than that. You know, so a lot of times they don't.
Sounds logical.
They just say it, right? It's the logical next step. But, you know, remember now that, you know, the parallel is the descending sons, like a creator son. You know, during his seven bestowals, our creator son, and, you know, every creator son when they do their seven bestowals, is God the supreme nature acquiring. Right, that last little leg of the first phase of their career, their finite career, they're God the supreme nature acquiring. And so once he's done with his seventh bestowal, he's God the supreme revealing. Right? You know, creator sons, once they're master sons, are God the supreme revealing, even now, like you'll be then. Okay, but in the second half of your career as a finality, you're God the mother revealing. But in the second half of, like, our creator son, our master son's career, he is now God the mother seeking, God the mother nature acquiring. So transcendently, predicated on the ultimate Trinity, right, being complete, in that absonate age to follow, those creator sons will be God the mother revealing. But you'll be God the Mother revealing already as a finaliter. Right? See, so yeah, there's this reciprocal dance between the two. Okay. But see, there's definitely places in the book where they, you know, they speak to you, you know, putting all these pieces together like this. You know, what are you revealing there in that next age? It's a revelation of supreme deity. See, it's obviously you're God the supreme revealing. Yep.
This fragment of the supreme that we receive when we become seventh state spirits.
Right.
Okay, that has to come from like a reservoir, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Which must not be available at this point.
Well, again, I mean, no, not even the revelators understand the physics of that bestowal, but you know, fundamentally, you can understand why you aren't given that now. Is it's a last step. It only fits in when you've done everything right up to that point within the finite. Right? And it's the last little piece that bridges you across the supremacy divide from the finite to the absonite. Right? See, so he's giving you this fragment that bridges, you know, that has one side of it interfaces with a total finite experience, and the other side interfaces with the beginning of an absonite experience. So it has nothing to interface to, can't be given to you, until you have, you know, a completed finite experience. It's like not being able to, you know, think about, normally you can't get a thought adjuster until you have experience up to third circular level. Right? Because, see, it only interfaces with that completed third circular level, right? If you gave it before that, it couldn't meet. See, so, I mean, theoretically, the Supreme Being could give it to you now, but it wouldn't touch anything. It's pointless. Just like it's pointless to give an adjuster to a seventh circular until you have something that can bridge the gap, like the, you know, the spirit of unification, the spirit of truth.
So, Michael didn't receive a fragment, but he's already deity nature.
So. Right. Creator son is different because they have, you know, they're a creator.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, so anyway, we don't need to go into all the details of that. But just, see, that's what they italicize those three words because they're hoping that you actually spend some time, like, working this all out, you know, and thinking about all this. Okay, God the Father seeking, you know, because I'm a creature, so I'm seeking something. God the Mother acquiring, because I'm experiential being, so I'm acquiring something. And in the second phase, okay, I'm still a creature, so I'm still seeking. Now what am I seeking? Well, I'm God the Supreme seeking. In the second phase, I'm still an experiential being, so I'm acquiring. What am I acquiring? God the Supreme nature acquiring then. They just want you to think about all that so that you, you know, when you get to this, like, oh, revelation, I know what I'm revealing. It's just like in paper 112, when they tell you in the second phase, you go out as a finaliter revealing God, but they don't tell you God the what. Yeah, you got to figure that out. I'm not God the Father nature acquiring. That's an existential fact, right? You can't accumulate that. Right? It's not an experiential thing that you can accumulate. You can't be God the Father nature acquiring. So the only thing I could be revealing is, you know, some experiential deity that I could get. And it's like, well, it's got to be either God the Mother or God the Supreme. Well, right here they're reminding you that, no, the God Supreme is in the second half because you're God Supreme revealing when you transcend the finite. It's like, oh, okay, so now I know I got to be God the Mother acquiring, right? And then you go, oh yeah, of course, and I take an oath to the Paradise Trinity, you know, it all makes sense, you know, it all fits together. It's these little details like this that you have to notice and put together and, you know, get you the whole picture fleshed out. Yep.
Well, another way maybe think about it also is that in finding God the Father, you know, you don't just, you know, turn the corner and find him. You find him by becoming more and more like it. And so, that's the way I sort of can picture, you know, therefore eventually finding the Supreme, because everybody becomes more and more like, you know, like what that is they're looking for, so to speak.
And right, and then
kind of interesting
and
thought.
It's a matter of coming to a proper understanding of what it means to be godlike.
Right.
Right. Okay.
But that's how you can then go ahead, as you mentioned before, and that's how you can reveal it. Because you're revealing it by the simple fact that you become more and more like it.
But see, you can literally acquire God the Mother nature, right? So you can be godlike in a literal sense like that. To be godlike in the relative to God the Father, so you got to rethink that. I mean, what does it mean? You know, what's some things I know about what God the Father does so that I could be like that, like him. Well, I know that the very first thing he did is put himself in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. So if I did likewise, I would be God the Father-like, right? And sure enough, you become a fine auditor and you take an oath to the Paradise Trinity. You've put yourself in full cooperative, perfect subordination to the Paradise Trinity. That's God-like.
In the Jesus teachers, they talk about, you know, the truth, beauty, and goodness aspect of that, right, as well. What did Jesus really recognize about, you know, who God is, so to speak? It's, right, it's a different level than...
Right, okay. And so let's say, you know, that's the last section in this paper. Let's say you think about that, that you literally, you know, embody truth, beauty, and goodness. Okay, and you say that's God-likeness. Okay, now if you want to be precise about that, technically, what would that be? Well, in a maximum sense, right, that would be God the supreme likeness, right?
So you're really only becoming God-like in the supreme sense.
See, you got to just remember, initially when you see, hear God-like, you think monotheism. It's like, no, there's lots of personalized deity. God-likeness means a lot of different things. And if you want to get precise, it's like, well, is that precisely God the Son-likeness, God the Spirit-likeness, God the Sevenfold-likeness, God the Mother-likeness? I mean, there's a lot of different God-likenesses, right? You know, for a beginning person, it doesn't matter, right? But if you want to get, you know, precise, you got to separate it. Technically, what kind of likeness is that? If I... the Universal Father is a person. If I exercise my will, that's God-likeness. Yeah. So, I mean, there's various degrees, right? If I exercise that gift that God the Father gave me, you know, in a sense, that's God-likeness, right? If I actually use that personality. It's sad to record that almost no one does. And so God-likeness is, kind of sparse. Okay. Yep, you had a question too?
Faith is personal recognition, yeah?
Yeah, that's one way to think about faith. Yeah, you can think about faith in a lot of ways, but yeah, if you take that approach, yeah.
I mean, so what's the distinction, what's the major threshold you cross when you personally recognize, you know, when you find the Father? I mean, that's a whole other...
Okay, so, you know, we often talk about faith grasp, yeah, right? So you're thinking about finding the Universal Father, that personality recognition of the Universal Father, that, you know, that gift from the Father, that personality, allows you to grasp an existential fact. I mean, technically, your faith grasp is what you're using. You grab a hold of the Universal Father and have a personality recognition of him. You're still using that faith grasp there to achieve that fact. But to grasp the existence of something is just the beginning. It doesn't give you any knowingness. It just gives you a recognition of the existence. You know, see, you know, because remember, there's those... What you do with your three insights, they're not sights. So you can't literally see a hand grasp with that faith grasp, right? It's not a sight thing, it's an insight thing. So, you know, you can't see what you're grasping. You know, your eyes are effectively closed, so you don't know what you're grasping. You just are aware that you've grasped something, you know, you've taken a hold of something.
Like to look at it, okay.
Yeah. I mean, there is that. Yeah, there is that too. I mean, there's a mutual grasp, but you are actively grasping. He's grasping in return. Yes, but just, you know, it's you know, those, you know, it's important to, you know, appreciate those three cosmic intuitions. You know, when you utilize those, there's a recognition, but not a knowingness, you know, in a fuller sense. There's just an awareness, if you will, of, you know, of the fact. You know, you can know, in a sense of recognition, that the external world exists. But you can't see the reality of the external world. All you can see is the appearance, the representation of it in your mind, right? In the same way, you can't literally, grab it with your hand. You know, it appears that you are, you really aren't. You know, what you're feeling, that tactile sense, is the representation in your mind, right? So, but because of that encirclement in the Holy Spirit, you recognize the reality, the thingness, the outsideness, the in the external worldness of that material fact. You know it exists, even though you don't know the details. I mean, I know this cup exists, I recognize its existence, but I don't know anything about its nature, right? It took us centuries and centuries to finally figure out that it was composed of molecules, and the molecules are composed of atoms, and, and et cetera, right? See, and that's the distinction about the find and the know they're talking about here, right? I mean, you find the Father, but it's not like you can write down the equations of the physics of his internal body then.
So the difference between having a closed eye sort of a grasp and actually, because they kind of talk a lot about, they talk about it as a major threshold of actually finding the Father. You try, and some people even fail.
Right.
I mean, it's not just a, it's not a fuzzy thing. It's a very distinct sort of threshold crossing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a definite, you're not grabbing hold of something squishy. The reality of something is firm, right? So it's, when you've locked on to something real. Right?
And you can recognize that with your eyes open, sort of.
Lucifer never felt the reality of the Universal Father like that. He could convince himself that it was all just a ruse imposed upon us. And the difference between you, quote unquote, recognizing, remember, you get up to the sixth level of meaning and they call that God knowingness. Okay. But that obviously must be well short of the kind of finding that you do on the third circuit of Avona. Right? See, so again, the more you think about this, the more you have to separate things into all sorts of degrees. Right? That initial God knowingness, my initial religious consciousness when I get up to the sixth level of meaning, is obviously very tenuous compared to what I do when I journey to paradise from the third circuit of Avona. And literally, feel my faith grasp clench upon the reality of his existence. Basically what you know is you feel your encirclement in the Father's personality gravity circuit. That's the God knowingness. You recognize your volitional relationship to the Universal Father. And you feel that that you're in a volitional flow with him. That's technically what you know there. Right? But to know, you're picturing that as a flow in a circuit. But to know his stasis at the center of the aisle. See, you can only do that on the aisle. Right, because his stasis is not present right here for me to grasp. It's not within. I have to get without to even potentially, close my faith grasp upon that static existential nature. Yeah. Okay. Another question or thought? Okay.
Yeah. Faith is vital to salvation.
second step is trust. When do we cross that threshold? How do we know, or do we know?
To go from faith to trust is to go from religion to philosophy. Is to go up from religion to philosophy. When you add logical recognition of the wholeness to that initial grasp of the part, it goes from faith to trust. You have faith in a part, but you do not yet recognize that that's a stable part in a wholeness. But once you do, that's technically what matures your sense, your feeling from quote-unquote faith to quote-unquote trust. You know, what is that differential between? You remember how they say it's a spiritual faith, but it's a soul trust. Okay? Spirit is a part. Right? Your Marantia soul is a triunity. Right? I mean, you literally think of two of the parts, physical and spiritual energy or spirit energy woven together, and obviously there's a super additive consequence there. Okay? It's the wholeness of soul that gives you trust as opposed to the partness of merely spirit.
Is it likely that we could achieve that on this level?
Yes. Right.
You know that because somebody did.
Right. I mean,
if
just even more technically, if, obviously, right, that. The religious life of Jesus and how he lived it. I mean, right, the fact that Jesus achieved all that, right, but just the very fact that we have a word soul, or that we have a word trust in the dictionary, is telling you something about how approachable that is. It's like, well, we also have infinity in the dictionary and something sacred. Yeah, but just think about it. Notice that the word trust, it isn't the word not faith. Infinity is the word not finity. The kind of word it is telling you that it's not very immediately tangible. Okay? But the very fact that we have this very tangible sounding thing in our language called trust must mean that you can get a hold of that very directly. Okay, and you can. You don't have to, there's effectively soul in the wholeness of the upper domain, right? I mean, the wholeness of the upper domain is copied and made substance as soul, right? So there can be quote-unquote soul trust. There can be trust in the wholeness of your relationship to the upper domain. In there is truth, in there is wholeness, right? In that wholeness, there is trust. Just being basically conscious in the lower domain and blindly reaching up and grabbing and having faith, see, it's just mere faith, right? But when you actually get up there and can kind of quote-unquote see the wholeness, right, it's not a blind grasp. It's like, feels like I'm holding on to something solid, but I can't see it, so I'm not sure, right? You can't get to trust when it's like that, when you're blind. You've got to have your eyes opened. You have to be born again in the upper domain and see the wholeness. And then there's that peace that passes all understanding. That's trust. You're standing on solid ground and you know it. You can see it. You can feel it. Right? You aren't just believing that it's solid. You know it to be solid. Okay. Faith solidifies into trust. Okay. Let's get a little more here.
Bear in mind all that God the Father and His Paradise Sons do for us. We in turn and in spirit have the opportunity to do for and in the emerging Supreme Being. The experience of love, joy, and service in the universe is mutual. God the Father does not need that his sons should return to him all that he bestows upon them, but they do, or may, in turn, bestow all of this upon their fellows and upon the evolving Supreme Being.
Okay, so you see, we're talking about lowercase s sons there. Talking about us, sons of the Father. Just two, a couple little technical things in there. Notice in the beginning, that first sentence when it says, the opportunity to do for and in the emerging Supreme Being. Okay? In is the root, and for is added on top of that. Okay, so in other words, the initial thing is in, right? Initially, you're in the Universal Mother. And your mind, you know, it does say emerging, right, after all, right? Right, so initially you're in the Universal Mother, and you can think of, you know, you're indirectly doing it for the Supreme Being through the Universal Mother, the She, to the Transcendent He. That's the in, but see, transcendently upon that, you're doing for, literally, the He, the Supreme Being. Just notice how precise they are, and encouraging you to, even though they're kind of directly talking about the He, they're reminding you that you're starting within, not without. And, you know, but they do, and of course, they have to throw in parenthetically, or may, because obviously, it's not sealed from the get-go with us, right? And just reminding you that there's the immediacy of bestowing all of this upon, you know, our fellows. But remember, there's a reflection of all of the meaning and value that we do as a genuine, personalized self. That's reflected through the Supreme Creators, you know, into the summation that eventually is the body of the Supreme Being, if you will, right? So that's, you know, so you can bestow it upon your fellows and at the same time upon the evolving Supreme Being. And there the evolving is more immediately the Almighty Supreme, right? And then into the Supreme Being. Whereas the first one, like I was pointing out, is more immediately the Universal Mother and then into the Supreme Being when they say evolving, or there they say emerging Supreme Being. And that's actually just the difference in the words. You know, you think more things evolving from the bottom up, so you think of the Almighty Supreme evolving from the bottom up, whereas the Universal Mother is the personal purpose of coming down and emerging within, just like the personal nature of the Creative Mother Spirit emerged, right, from the top down within, you know, subsequent to the primary eruption and ever more so, you know, as she went forward. So just notice how precise they are with those words, and remember that, you know, when they say something like evolving or emerging Supreme Being, they're wanting you to think about, you know, within the finite. You know, it's a way of like saying the Universal Mother without saying the Universal Mother, for instance. Yeah, which they don't directly give you until you get way up there in paper 117. Okay, I mean, the Supreme Being, period, is not emerging. It exists, right? I mean, if he didn't completely exist, he couldn't have created Majestan, right? An emerging being doesn't create a completed being creates, right? I mean, so top down, there already is a Supreme Being, right? And there is no emerging. You know, so again, you know, like, you know, when you're thinking of it as one of the sevenfold creators, the Supreme Being, see, again, that just reminds you, as a creator, that's a top down fact, like he created Majestan. Right? See, so that top down being is in the sevenfold, is one of those sevenfold creators. Okay. All right, then get the last paragraph here.
All creational phenomena are reflective of antecedent creator spirit activities, said Jesus, and it is literally true. The Son does only those things which he sees the Father do. In time, you mortals may begin the revelation of the Supreme to your fellows, and increasingly may you augment this revelation as you ascend paradiseward. In eternity, you may be permitted to make increasing revelations of this God of evolutionary creatures on supreme levels, even ultimate, as seventh stage finaliters.
Okay, so leveraging off of that little quote from the Gospel of John there, the Son, okay, only does those things which he sees the Father do. Okay, that literal sees is, remember, a creator Son literally has Father-type deity. It's part of his deity nature, and hence can do a Father-like fact, very literally. A simple way of expressing that, there in the Gospel of John. They remind you, think about it, in more as literal a terms as you can. It is literally true. Like he who's seen me has seen the Father. But they're reminding you in a general sense. Like we were talking. If you're an experiential being, you are literally acquiring a nature that is a certain deity likeness. Right? It may be mother deity, if you're God the Mother Nature acquiring, right? So, the Supreme, deity likeness, if you're God the Supreme Nature acquiring. Whatever it is, an experiential being is literally acquiring a deity likeness, a developing divinity. Okay? And so, that bit about, you're not, it's basically reminding you, you're not the source. If you manifest something, it's because you've gotten that from some source, right? If a creator Son does what it does, it's not because he's a source, it's because the source has given him that. Right? The creator Son's not a source. And so notice what they're saying. See, in time you mortals may begin, and notice every time it's may here, may, see, every time, just like the parenthetical, or may up there in the previous paragraph. Okay, so you may begin the revelation of the Supreme to your fellows. He's going, well, are they talking about when I'm a finaliter? Well, no, it says, and increasingly may you augment this revelation as you ascend paradiseward. So, right, it's God the Supreme is God the Mother initially that you're acquiring there. And even though you're not manifesting it in its fullness until you're a finaliter, that God the Mother revealing, they're just reminding you that in subtle essence, it begins right away, right? You begin to manifest your heritage to that parent right away. And then in eternity, you may be permitted to make increasing revelations of this God of evolutionary creatures on supreme levels. Right, so there, obviously, that's when it's not God the Mother revealing, which is God the Supreme down in the finite as God the Mother. If I get up to supreme levels, I can actually be directly God the Supreme revealing. Just like we figured out before. And then the fact that God the Supreme, it goes beyond that just foundation level of the Absonite. God the Supreme is there in the Absolute Trinity, right, even. Right? So they're just reminding you that this, to be God the Supreme revealing opens up the doorway you know, to the ends, endless cycles of eternity. There's no limit to just how profound that revelation can be as it goes on through Absonite ages, as you continue to go up with, you know, the rising absonity of the domain that you will be part of. Okay, so that's, you know, it's just, so you can see that there's two main points of this section, just to get you to reflect a little bit more precisely on the Supreme Being, and then think about this God the whatever, you know, revealing or seeking or acquiring, or, right, to think about that, you know, those differentials there. Okay, now this section, it looks huge, okay, but we're not going to unpack this very much. Mostly we're going to have to just kind of read it and feel it a little bit, because it's pretty deep. I'll just make a few little comments through it. You can kind of just get the basic sense. So let's just jump in and see what we got here.
Number 9, universal absolute unity. The unqualified absolute and the deity absolute are unified in the universal absolute. The absolutes are coordinated in the ultimate, conditioned in the supreme, and time-space modified in God the sevenfold. On sub-infinite levels, there are three absolutes, but in infinity, they appear to be one. On paradise, there are three personalizations of deity, but in the Trinity, they are one.
Okay, so what they're going to, you see, what they're going to do is they're going to give you some thoughts about two facets of deity, the Paradise Trinity, and the facet of deity that's called the Absolute, that you can personalize as God the Absolute. And they're wonderings about the relationship between the Paradise Trinity and the Absolute. And notice that they emphasize oneness in that paragraph. God the Absolute is the Absolute One. You know, capital A, capital O, another name. You know, as an individual, the Absolute One. And again, see, that's not the Universal Father. It's the Absolute One. And we've mentioned before, the Paradise Trinity is the co-infinite one. Basically, the stuff that they're talking about here is the stuff that we begin to touch upon as we culminate the Total Deity Seminar. You know, so after many, many, many hours of trying to unpack total deity, you start to touch upon some of these things they're talking about. So it's way too complicated, you know, to speak to in a very direct way. But what it fundamentally, the question marks that they're going to bring up here are how confusing it is if you take the experiential all the way to its ends. It touches upon the existential, and it gets confusing to try to think about it, because, as you know, we, from a time viewpoint, you can extrapolate that time viewpoint, and as long as you have an experiential phenomenon, you can pretty straightforwardly, you know, think about some sort of a sequence of facts. It's at least a logical sequence, but it can start to get a little bit confusing when you bring in the existential, trying to figure out, well, which fact is logically first and which fact is logically second. It's like, well, if I look at it like this, it seems like this is first and that's second, but if I look at it like that, it's the other way around, I'm confused. I mean, that's one of the things we begin to do towards the end of the Total Deity Seminar is touch upon some of that complexity and confusion of when the heights of the experiential meet the existential, and when the two experiential trinities meet the existential trinity. And, okay, so.
It almost seems logical. When you finish with the experiential, you've got to meet the existential.
Yeah, but the existential is there before the experiential.
Well,
so are you at the end or the beginning? Right, see, are you at the end or the beginning?
But that's true, because the existential is always, it's there either way. It's just that the experiential is completed. So you've got the existential in the front and in the back. In other words.
Right, but also, you know.
So it becomes part of the whole thing becomes part of the existential.
Also, if you go immediately from the existential, you don't just go to the beginning of the experiential, like you're talking about. You also go to the end of the experiential, so that the end of the experiential is the beginning of what comes from the existential. And so, I see, is it really the end or is it the beginning? Right. I mean, we think of the end as the end and the beginning as the beginning. But it's just as much, the end is just as much the beginning as it is the end.
Well, it's a good thing it's outside of time, isn't it?
Okay, this is what you gotta, you gotta remember, time is not an absolute, right? So you can't impose that on this. Absolute time is eternity, right? There's no, right? And so this is what they're about to allude to. But there's this facet of deity called the absolute that is a very mysterious facet to try to get your mind wrapped around. Okay, so let's see what they say.
The major philosophic proposition of the master universe is this. Did the absolute, the three absolutes as one in infinity, exist before the Trinity? And is the absolute ancestral to the Trinity? Or is the Trinity antecedent to the absolute?
I see. So you have the basic question is which is first and which is second, sort of logically. And then, the corollary thing, if the absolute exists before the Trinity, then you have to also wonder, is the absolute ancestral to the Trinity? Does the Trinity stem from the absolute?
Yeah, but that's almost kind of like the thing they talk about in, I think it's paper one or two or whatever in the beginning about, we're just putting things in a sequence for you, but in fact there really was never any beginning.
All right. Okay, so let's bring that up. That, what they're talking about here is absolutely nothing to do with that.
Okay.
Because again, our time bias, think about who's saying this. This is not a human writing this in their temporal, right? So just think about it. The major philosophic proposition of the master universe is this. Okay, so the sequence we're talking about is not temporal sequence. It's logical sequence. Nothing to do with time. Logically.
So that must be time, right?
No. Right. See, notice what they say, antecedent. Okay. They purposely use those words that you could merely interpret temporally, but those are more fundamentally logical words. That X is antecedent to Y. X implies Y. Not X is before Y in time. Okay, but logically antecedent, okay?
But even outside of time.
Of course they are using some temporal language here because, you don't have anything else. But recognize it's not a temporal question because it's all outside of time. And so what is the question they're asking? It's not just a meaningless question that divine counselors and universal sensors and whatnot spend trillions of years contemplating. What are they contemplating? This is not humans contemplating this. This is, this is the master philosophers. Okay?
So it's way over our heads.
Right. What are they contemplating? I mean, that's what I'm just trying to get you to think. So don't, if we spend this much on every paragraph, we're not going to get anywhere. Okay? Just appreciate all they're trying to do here is just tease you to have some interest in a philosophic question. This has nothing to do with religion. We're talking about the absolute and the paradise trinity. I mean, basically, religion has to do with the universal father, and we're not talking about the universal father. We're talking about the absolute and the paradise trinity. And we're talking about philosophic questions. And you're trying to understand the logical relationship amongst the various facets of deity. You know, like when I say mother deity stems from the paradise trinity, I don't mean that you can film a temporal movie, you know, and the paradise trinity looks like a spigot, you know, and the mother deity looks like the water flowing out of the spigot. That's not what I mean when I say mother deity stems from the paradise trinity. It has nothing to do with time. I mean logically, right? Mother deity stems from the paradise trinity is antecedent logically to mother deity. Right? To logically understand the nature of mother deity, you have to have the paradise trinity in existence in your logical picture first. It's nothing to do with time. Right? You're contemplating relationships in eternity. Okay, and logical order. Okay, so this is what they're thinking about in this, you know, in the same way that I would say that the Paradise Trinity is logically antecedent to Mother Deity. They're wondering, is the absolute facet of deity antecedent to the Paradise Trinity, which is an antecedent, or is the other way around? Is Paradise Trinity and
so if they can't figure it out, does that mean really in fact there's no answer? Maybe
there's well, both answers. Okay. I mean, again, which is true? The Supreme Being was there before the finite began, or the Supreme Being was only there as when the finite was completed?
Both are true.
Both are true. Right? See, again, it's a matter of it's only when you contemplate things from different directions, you begin to transcend the partness of your perspective and try to get into the wholeness. They spend all this time going back and forth on this because it's a very transcendent thing, and it may be that it's only one is true. But the more you get into it, the more you recognize that both of those are true, and you need to understand how it is that both are true. Okay, read the next paragraph.
Something like in the beginning paragraph or introduction, you might want to consider thinking about this from a deity perspective and a reality perspective also.
Because there's no reality here, it's all deity.
Well, they could see.
See, that's the thing. We're talking about two facets of deity, and we're trying to figure out, you know, a logical order.
Get my hands around a little, my mind around it a little bit, by answering that, just like the Supreme Being before and after the finite total, because I can think about. I can think about before the finite, and something had to create this. But from our view as experiential creatures, we experience and comprehend it and learn it, from the other way.
Right. See, now I brought in that because, you know, that's all fine and dandy, but you know, that's just a simple example of looking at something from the time viewpoint, say, and the eternity viewpoint, you know, putting the two together. But this is a little different than that, right? This is trying to just explore facets of deity and understand their order, you know, and it's all in the deity perspective.
Okay.
But you're just recognizing that, you know, because you have experiential deity and existential deity, you know, you can come at it from the experiential deity side, or you can come at it from the existential deity side. Right? But you're coming at it from the experiential deity side in eternity. See, so there's not, it's not the time viewpoint and the eternity viewpoint, you know, in opposite directions. Okay. Anyway.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. That cleared
okay.
it up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
At least to some degree.
Right. To bit. Some degree. Like I said, you know, it's very, okay.
That's what they needed to put in here. Okay.
See what they say next.
Is the unqualified absolute a force presence independent of the Trinity? Does the presence of the deity absolute connote the unlimited function of the Trinity? And is the universal absolute the final function of the Trinity, even a Trinity of Trinities?
See, so just another way. See, so if you're thinking, if the Trinity is followed by the absolute, and then you take that and split it apart into the three absolutes, right? You know, so you could think, does the presence of the deity absolute connote the unlimited function of the Trinity? Right? So you could think about it as a downstepping like that. They're just giving you, some of the subsequent questions you could ask predicated on those previous questions. And they throw in even a Trinity of Trinities. To actually get into a better understanding of all this, you have to bring in not just the Paradise Trinity, you have to bring in the Trinity Infinite. The Trinity of Trinities is from the individuality viewpoint. From the unity viewpoint, it's the Trinity Infinite. And understanding the Trinity Infinite in the deity perspective is one of the things that allows you to begin to better think about all this complicated stuff. Like I said, we're not going to even remotely get into that. Okay, but just notice the suggestive things. You know, they seem like out of the blue to throw in the Trinity of Trinities. Okay. Again, they've worded these questions not by going to their iPad and looking on their iPad and seeing what question they have, you know, the running question that they ponder. They've formulated some questions to tease you, like they always do, into trying to figure out what all these questions have to do with the Trinity of Trinities, for instance. Okay. And sure enough, as you unpack total deity, you finally get to the point where you go, oh, I see what they were, you know, getting at there. Okay, all right, let's keep going here.
On first thought, a concept of the absolute as ancestor to all things, even the Trinity, seems to afford transitory satisfaction of consistency gratification and philosophic unification. But any such conclusion is invalidated by the actuality of the eternity of the Paradise Trinity. We are taught and we believe that the Universal Father and His Trinity associates are eternal in nature and existence. There is, then, but one consistent philosophic conclusion, and that is, the Absolute is, to all universe intelligences, the impersonal and coordinate reaction of the Trinity of Trinities to all basic and primary space situations, intra-universal and extra-universal, to all personality intelligences of the grand universe. The Paradise Trinity forever stands in finality, eternity, supremacy, and ultimacy, and for all practical purposes of personal comprehension and creature realization as absolute.
Okay, so again, let's just skip most of the details, but just some thoughts. Like, when you think about the Trinity functioning on the Isle of Paradise, that's not the Trinity functioning as a Trinity of supremacy or as a Trinity of ultimacy, that's the Trinity of absoluteness. So you could say to yourself, well, if the Trinity is going to function as a Trinity of absoluteness, wouldn't the absolute have to exist as a reference prior to the Trinity functioning as the Trinity of absoluteness, to define what absoluteness is?
Yeah.
Eh? Okay. But then you say, Well, yes, but you think of the absolute as sort of a result of the whole experiential process, and the Paradise Trinity is existential and existed before that process began. So now I've got the Paradise Trinity before and after the absolute. Okay, see, those are the basic things. They're just, you know, letting you think about you know, how complicated that this is to ponder. You can see they're throwing in the Trinity of Trinities there again. You know, and that last little bit, just reminding you that if you reflect on it, it's like, well, there definitely is an absoluteness to the Paradise Trinity, so why isn't it one of the seven absolutes of infinity? Or why aren't there eight absolutes of infinity, in other words? Right? See, so again, just that bottom line there, you know, skipping over trying to penetrate all of that verbiage, but just, yeah, when you see it coming to that bottom line as absolute, right? See, notice that should invoke a question. Why aren't there eight absolutes of infinity? Right? See, it's those kinds of questions that get you unpacking total deity and seeking for questions that aren't immediately answered in the direct words of the revelation. You noticed that up in the first paragraph it said the absolutes are coordinated in the ultimate. Right? You see that word coordinated, you know, right? And you see him, you know, up in the foreword listing the seven absolutes of infinity and saying they're coordinated. Well, by what? You know? And they're not self-coordinating. You know, all these questions, okay? Again, just basically recognize that it's this kind of stuff that they just throw out here that's so immediately you know, impenetrable that eventually will lead your curiosity to try to unfollow some of the clues and unpack things. Figure out what it is that they're teasing me with here. And you can tell it's so far removed from any simple religious question, it's not even funny, right? She's like, it doesn't have anything, you know, any immediate relevancy to questions that a child of God asks. Right? This is all adult of God mysteries, you know, of a philosophic nature. Okay, let's keep going. Oh, maybe just one little preface. They're going to do what they did so many times. Since the details are very complicated, it's like, well, how about if I just fall back into the seven absolutes infinity and I try to understand, you know, that in the reality perspective, the first source and center of all things and beings kind of innately has unity, and I'll just kind of wave my hands and understand it that way. Okay, they're going to do that again, like we saw them doing many times, just kind of falling back on that crutch of the monothetic, you know, the single doingness of the first source and center. Yep.
John Stevens wants to know if the Paradise Trinity is infinite.
Yes, the Paradise Trinity is infinite.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only facet of deity that directly engages infinity. If it engages infinity, it must be infinite. Yeah, I mean, you know, all these facts are, you know, the absolute permeates infinity. Yeah, it stands apart in the midst of that, you know. But yeah, I mean, as soon as you're talking about absolute, you're talking about eternity and infinity. No. And it's just all this complexity. See, if you know that. Monotheism has no way to even begin to address, you know. God the Absolute is not God the Father. Okay.
As creature minds may view this problem, they are led to the final postulate of the universal I Am as the primal cause and the unqualified source of both the Trinity and the Absolute. When, therefore, We crave to entertain a personal concept of the absolute. We revert to our ideas and ideals of the Paradise Father. When we desire to facilitate comprehension or to augment consciousness of this otherwise impersonal absolute, we revert to the fact that the Universal Father is the existential Father of absolute personality. The Eternal Son is the absolute person, though not, in the experiential sense, the personalization of the absolute.
Okay, so just two things there. Oh, well, three things. You notice at the beginning, like I said, see, they're using that expression that they did before, the universal I am, you know, of just kind of thinking all the way back to the root of God the Father and that relationship to the unseparated nature of the concept of the I am. Okay. See, so like I said, they're just, you know, kind of falling back on that. And then they just throw out, you know, a couple little things for you to reflect on. You know, again, remember that the personality absolute is the Eternal Son, not the Universal Father. And again, that absolute person, you know, the absolute person, capital A, capital P, right, is not God the absolute. Right, like the personalization of the absolute. See, the absolute's a facet of deity. Personalization of the absolute is God the absolute. Right, so you have all this complexity, and it's the blend of relationship between existential and experiential. You know, from a time viewpoint, you think of this experiential God culminating in existentialness as God the absolute, you know, and like the Eternal Son, you think of starting as existential and then acquiring mother-type deity as the Eternal Mother-Son, right? And so I'm going from the existential to the experiential.
But the potential is
wrong. Right, and like they're saying, prior. In a simple sense of just the first source and center of all things and beings, right, you can rationalize it as all just starting with that, like they're saying, okay. But if you want a better understanding, you need to go beyond. And then the other thing in the middle is parallel to us talking about the Supreme Father. When therefore we crave to entertain a personal concept of the absolute, right, to try to understand God the absolute, we revert to our ideas and ideals of the Paradise Father. Right? See, in the same sense, like I said, I mean, if you want to comprehend the nature of the Universal Father as a finite being, well, that's technically the Supreme Father. Yeah, see, so in that sense, he was seen the Supreme Father as seen the Universal Father. And they're doing the same thing here. It's like, well, you know, I'm going to have to just try to think of the Father Absolute and the personalization of that, and in some sense, that must be like God the Absolute. Right? But it's also incredibly transcendent of even the highest finite beings. That's all they're telling you, is they're just, you know, even they have to just sort of use parallels like that. You know, they don't really understand how to think about God the Absolute. It's just too complicated, ultimately. Okay, let's keep going here.
And then we go on to envisage the experiential trinities as culminating in the experiential personalization of the deity absolute, while conceiving the universal absolute as constituting the universe and the extra universe phenomena of the manifest presence of the impersonal activities of the unified and coordinated deity associations of supremacy, ultimacy, and infinity, the Trinity of Trinities.
Okay. I remember I was alluding to that just a little bit, of that whole bit about, you know, we go on to envisage the experiential Trinities as culminating, right? Okay. And you notice that they also are doing here again, like they did before, this whole bit of they had intra-universal and extra-universal, and here they're doing it again, constituting the universe and the extra-universe. And again, you're thinking about inside and the outside, right? I mean, what you have is immanence and what you have is transcendence. You know, like I said, it's all way too complicated to really unpack in any detail. But you notice again, they bring in the Trinity of Trinities. Okay, so it should be pretty clear at this point that until you get to the point of unpacking total deity, till you get to the point where you really understand more about the Trinity of Trinities, and like I said, from the unity viewpoint, the Trinity Infinite, you're not in the space that they're talking about here, right? And so you have to get to the ends of sort of your initial survey of total deity to get to the point where, any of this is immediately relevant. Okay, so that's why we just can't, But one thing that you can appreciate in the midst of all the complexity, just go back to the title, Universal Absolute Unity. The fundamental quality of deity is unity. And there's this facet of deity called the absolute. Right? So there's going to be universal absolute unity because of that fact. And you know that there's some validity to that facet of deity related to the experiential. It's not a purely existential facet of deity like the Paradise Trinity. Right? So it's telling you that even though it's very transcendent, there is an absolute unity backdrop for the experiential domain, if for no other reason, because of that facet of deity. And they also occasionally keep throwing in little hints about the other aspect that you can think of as being within this intra-universal, and that's Mother Deity, stemming from the other facet of deity they keep talking about here, the Paradise Trinity. Okay, so what they're doing is they're trying to give you a sense of as you think about what encompasses and what's without. What's the various ways that you can think about how what's without penetrates within? Okay. And there's sort of an immediacy of penetrating in. You think of the absolute as being a presence that's all within, but made a little bit more tangible as a bottom-up thing of the three reservoirs, the unqualified, the deity, and the universal absolutes. And then also penetrating within Mother Deity. So that there's this coordination. There's a mother deity related to God the Absolute, just like there's, you can have God the Supreme as God the Mother. You can have God the Ultimate as God the Mother. You can have God the Absolute as God the Mother, right? Hierarchy of God the Mother, right? The fact that I just talked about the Mother stemming from Paradise Trinity, and I just talked about God the Absolute as God the Mother, that should help you to appreciate why they're tossing those back and forth, and it's like, well, which one is, antecedent to, these different ways you can think about it. Okay? All right, let's keep going here.
God the Father is discernible on all levels from the finite to the infinite, and though his creatures from Paradise to the evolutionary worlds have variously perceived him, only the Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit know him as an infinity.
We already talked about that, right? Only those two know him as an infinity. And again, that we all know about him as an infinity, but to actually know him as an existential infinity is another matter.
Yeah. At eye level with infinity.
Yeah, and it's appropriate that that's, speaking existentially there, it's the existential aspects of those other two persons that know him. Okay.
Spiritual personality is absolute only on paradise, and the concept of the absolute is unqualified only in infinity. Deity presence is absolute only on paradise, and the revelation of God must always be partial, relative, and progressive until his power becomes experientially infinite in the space potency of the unqualified absolute, while his personality manifestation becomes experientially infinite in the manifest presence of the deity absolute, and while these two potentials of infinity become reality unified in the universal absolute.
We'll mostly just leave that, as just further reflection on this, but just notice, something that I used a little bit ago. Deity presence is absolute only on paradise. All right, so on the Isle of Paradise, Trinity functions as a Trinity of absoluteness, for instance. Okay. Notice some little things that you can make logical sense out of, and try to grab a hold of at least that, and try to get a consistent picture in your head. If you're going to unpack total deity, you've got all this complexity, and you've got to maintain this rigorous, logical thing where you don't violate simple, logical things like that. Deity presence is absolute only on paradise, when you're reading parts of the book like this, just skim and look for something that's a little bit more low-hanging fruit that you can grab a hold of and have that sort of just become an anchor in the back of your mind that can lead to greater things down the road.
You don't say that very often.
Okay. Okay, keep going here.
But beyond sub-infinite levels, the three absolutes are one, and thereby is infinity, deity realized, regardless of whether any other order of existence ever self-realizes consciousness of infinity.
And so they're, notice how they're reminding you, at the very least, you've got God the Absolute in this very extensive relationship to infinity, even if no other beings ever self-realizes that. And then also, that whole bit of, yes, you don't have God the Infinite, where literally infinity is the body of God the Infinite, and that's all there is, okay? But you do have, and thereby is infinity, deity realized. So you have an aspect of that, God the Infinite, expressed as God the Absolute. So you could work to figure out how that can happen, that God the Absolute doesn't automatically become God the Infinite and that's all there is. How can God the Absolute exist and yet not become God the Infinite? These are the kind of questions that are in play. Like I said, it's the kind of stuff that you unpack in the Total Deity Seminar. Okay.
Existential status in eternity implies existential self-consciousness of infinity, even though another eternity may be required to experience self-realization of the experiential potentialities inherent in an infinity eternity an eternal infinity.
I love to play things back and forth like that. Again, I think mostly I would just let it be. You can see they're just trying to get you to logically think about the complexities of contemplating things like God the Absolute.
Another eternity.
Yeah, the endless cycles of eternity. Right? See, yeah. I mean, remember, in one way you think about, getting to future eternity, but that's a very limited thing. I mean, and you can recognize geographically how limited that is. You get to future eternity, and you've just gotten to God the Ultimate and the ends of the fourth outer space level. And there's an infinite cosmos, infinite beyond that, right? So you haven't really gotten that far, right?
You're just at a different beginning.
Right. Kind of starting over. Okay. So there's sort of the eternity beyond eternity, right? See, even though another eternity. Okay, keep going.
And God the Father is the personal source of all manifestations of deity and reality to all intelligent creatures and spirit beings throughout all the universe of universes. As personalities, now or in the successive universe experiences of the eternal future, no matter if you achieve the attainment of God the Sevenfold, comprehend God the Supreme, find God the Ultimate, or attempt to grasp the concept of God the Absolute, you will discover to your eternal satisfaction that in the consummation of each adventure, you have, on new experiential levels, rediscovered the eternal God, the Paradise Father of all universe personalities.
I see. So just, the simple thing there we already talked about, right? If you you achieve the attainment of God the Sevenfold, comprehend God the Supreme. So remember, we talked about that. Comprehend God the Supreme, right? That's the Supreme Father. See, so they're just reminding you, see, there's a hierarchy of all that. Within God the Sevenfold, for instance, you have the Super Fathers, right? The Ancients of Days, right? They're just getting you to reflect on how, from a simple in a perspective of from the individuality viewpoint, you have that first source and center, and you can kind of rationalize everything into that space and come to some resolution on it. But you can go beyond that simple picture as well. But there's a truth to it because, like they're saying, because it is appropriate to call the Supreme Being the Supreme Father. That's a downstepped expression of the Universal Father. Yeah, that is true. Even though it's a lot more than just that. The Supreme Being is also the Supreme Mind. And when you bring in mind, you're going apart from the Father. Right? So, but anyway. Okay, keep going.
The Universal Father is the explanation of universal unity, as it must be supremely, even ultimately, realized in the post-ultimate unity of absolute values and meanings, unqualified reality.
Again, just like we say, you can try to understand things from the first source and center perspective. And the unqualified capital R reality is shorthand for infinity reality, the totality of reality, or just lowercase I infinity, like they were using at other points. Okay.
The master force organizers go out into space and mobilize its energies to become gravity responsive to the paradise pull of the Universal Father. And subsequently, there come the Creator Sons who organize these gravity responding forces into inhabited universes and therein evolve intelligent creatures who receive unto themselves the spirit of the Paradise Father and subsequently ascend to the Father to become like him in all possible divinity attributes.
Again, you notice how they're just, they gave you this little tease, this really transcendent stuff, and then they're kind of bringing it home and kind of giving you a simple story that you can relate to a little bit more. But you can also, think about, why are they telling this story again? They've told that. Well, they wanted to just give you that little vignette story in the wake of trying to expand your mind a little bit, right? So that maybe you approach that simple story less simplistically, right? And think about how it's a story for a child of God that exists in a much bigger picture that an adult of God could eventually try to understand. So that's their attempt to see if they can encourage you to go from childhood to adolescence. Right? Okay.
The ceaseless and expanding march of the Paradise creative forces through space seems to presage the ever-extending domain of the gravity grasp of the Universal Father and the never-ending multiplication of varied types of intelligent creatures who are able to love God and be loved by Him, and who, by thus becoming God-knowing, may choose to be like Him, may elect to attain paradise and find God.
See, notice how we even brought in God-knowingness, way back when we were talking about things there, and how that's a beginning, and then going to choosing to be like Him, going beyond that immediate, simple God-likeness there to greater degrees of God-likeness. All right, again, but you can see it's basically that simple story that in the wake of talking about the imponderable philosophic aspects of God the Absolute, okay, which, wasn't in your mind coming from your monotheism and first reading the book and hearing about the Universal Father, right? And the simple little story to the child, that the book just gives you some more specific facts but doesn't really challenge the simplicity of the sort of a monotheistic child of God story.
The universe of universes is altogether unified. God is one in power and personality. There is coordination of all levels of energy and all phases of personality. Philosophically and experientially, in concept and in reality, all things and beings center in the Paradise Father. God is all and in all, and no things or beings exist without Him.
So you can see those last three paragraphs, you're just very much, and you're going, okay, I'm all right. but it was a little attempt to, you're clinging to your mother's leg, right? And they're encouraging you to take a few steps away from her, skirt tails, right? And then journey back, right? You can see that's what they're doing. See if you can, if you can begin to allow, just that last. You get to that last sentence. God is in all, or is all, and in all. But are you thinking some very false monotheistic God the Infinite picture there? They're hoping not, right? They're hoping that you maybe aren't just falling into the colossal error of capital P pantheism there, and that God doesn't just mean God the Father to you, Right? God is personalized deity, and the facets of deity are many. There's even a facet called the absolute. You know? And, you know, your initial thoughts is, well, that's got to be the Father. It's like, no, it's not. So, see, they're trying to just give you a little journey away and come back, you know, and maybe next time you can, without getting scared, you can journey a little bit farther before you scurry back to your mom's leg, okay? And see if you can begin to, you know, wean yourself, you know, and move into adolescence, you know, and eventually adulthood.
Yeah, there's, to get up in these upper realms, you have to entertain doubt. You have to allow yourself to doubt what you knew. Mm-hmm. Incertitude before. But then after you've explored for a while, it's okay to give yourself back that certainty that you had before.
Yeah. Coming back to that certainty you had before after you allowed yourself to doubt, what you discover, you can see how they told this story, that you've told the story as if it was a literal fact before. Well, it's not a literal fact that the only God is the universal Father and that sort of stuff. But there's a truth to your story. Right? So that's what you do, is you discover you can come back to the truth without having to come back to the simplistic facts of your initial story.
Right?
You allow a more complex set of facts. All right, so we'll finish up the paper next time with truth, beauty, and goodness. And you know, you can see there's all sorts of delightful stuff in that section. It's a meaty section, so it'll definitely take us 2 hours to go through it. All right, let's take a moment here, everyone.